Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Great America Podcast with Lou Dobbs, always in the fight for truth, justice, and yes, our American way of life. And now, here he is, the Peabody Award-winning voice of truth, the great Lou Dobbs.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this edition of the Great America Show, dedicated, as always, to truth, justice, and the American way. Thanks for being with us, sharing part of your day with us, and supporting the success of this podcast. We thank you so much for your support, for your commitment to this great country of ours. Our country, as you know, is in desperate need of loyal citizens committed to our national values, our way of life, our Constitution, because as a nation, we've rarely been this divided. And the divide in America is very real, it is profound, and it is deepening in large measure, thanks to President Joe Biden. President Biden bears much of the responsibility, insisting as he does on open borders, flying illegal immigrants from the borders to towns and cities all across the country in the dead of night. Biden is flaunting our laws and the Constitution. While sending our troops to Eastern Europe, he ignores the Mexican drug cartels that get ever richer, more powerful, with Biden's assistance in keeping the border wide open, and the deadly drugs, sex trafficking, and human smuggling that rages over that border. Mexico itself is now even more lawless and violent, but so is our southern border. Border states and big Democrat-run cities are caught in a nationwide rising violent crime wave. Gang violence and murders out of control, corruption of every kind has captured our border and American cities alike. America is racked by spikes in violent crime, left-wing efforts to defund police and law enforcement everywhere, vicious and lethal attacks against our police that are organized and orchestrated. There are simply too many murders of those law enforcement officers for me to believe that they're not being targeted. Concurrently, left-wing prosecutors are refusing to do their jobs to bring the killers to justice. Many of them supported those DAs that will not prosecute the criminals who break our laws daily. Many of them are supported by George Soros and his open society neo-Marxist. But those left-wing prosecutors are now found all over the country. One of the most liberal district attorneys, supported by Soros, of course, is George Gascon in Los Angeles County. Gascon is a devout left-wing prosecutor who is indistinguishable from any neo-Marxist whose rhetoric is that of social justice warriors and any left-wing activist. But when off-duty Los Angeles police officer Fernando Arroyo was shot and killed by gang members, the prosecutor's office declined to file maximum charges against them. Los Angeles County Sheriff Alex Villanueva decided to go around Gascon's office and bring in the U.S. attorney in order to prosecute to the maximum those accused of his murder. That's highly unusual. It's a rare move, in fact, but that's the situation in Los Angeles with Gascon as district attorney. Joining us now is the man who made that decision to go around Gascon. He is the sheriff of Los Angeles County, the largest, by the way, sheriff's office in the country. Joining us now, Sheriff Alex Villanueva, here on the Great America Show. Sheriff Villanueva, thank you very much for being with us. Welcome to the Great America Show. It's an honor to talk with you, and I know that this is a difficult day, but we do appreciate it.
No, my pleasure to be here, Lou. And we just finished the funeral services for LAPD officer Fernando Arroyos. Friday was the officer, the services for NYPD officer Jason Rivera, and the list goes on and on.
It is a shame because we're experiencing it all over the country. And to that end, I've got to ask you, Sheriff, at the outset of my introduction to you, there are so many of these murders. I have to believe that a number of them are targeted, that there is an orchestration, a war on law enforcement in this country. Your thoughts?
Well, I think the politicians, their rhetoric, rising the temperature since 2020, the chickens have come home to roost. Now there's people on the extremes that are believing in that ideology that cops are the root of all evil and an existential threat. So they're doing is raising the conflict potential in any encounter between law enforcement and, for example, a bad guy doing bad things and needs to be arrested.
And we just had two officers shot and killed in New York. The county, the district attorney's office is another Soros-backed prosecutor. It's very difficult to understand what is going on when prosecutors, and I know George Gascon, the district attorney in Los Angeles, you've sidestepped him. But to see what these prosecutors are doing, how much of that leniency that it seems like maximum tolerance is, in your judgment, responsible for this crime wave?
Well, it bears a brunt. It's one of the elements that is definitely contributing towards this wave of violence. Look at the lack of prosecutions for crimes involving guns. Well, now all the crooks have guns because they know there's no consequence if they're caught with a gun. Difference between a strong arm robbery and an armed robbery, for example. So there is definitely very bad consequences for failure to hold bad guys accountable for the crimes they commit.
And while the prosecutors are also moving toward lesser crimes, pleading deals, refusing to bring, as in the case of the murder of Los Angeles police officer Arroyo, the LA district attorney doesn't want to bring maximum charges against him, against those members of a gang who killed him just wantonly. It boggles my mind to think that such a person would be in office.
Well, they've bought into this whole theory that it's systemic racism that has filled up our prisons, and they're going to combat mass incarceration by emptying out the prisons and the jails as a way to prove that they're anti-racist. In the actuality, what they're doing is they're condemning black and brown communities to ever higher levels of violence because these people are back out in the street as quickly as possible, facing the minimum consequences possible, and that is not going to end well for the very same people they claim that they're trying to protect.
And in Los Angeles County, you have another element. You're one of the jurisdictions, your office in Los Angeles County, your funding has been cut. The sheriff's office has actually been defunded. How do you even function? I mean, Los Angeles, anybody who's been to Los Angeles knows what a vast area that is. You have the largest sheriff's office in the country, but that is also one of the largest areas to police.
It's getting more challenging every single day. I started with a $101 million deficit. Then they defunded $145 million 1 year. The next year, they took out another $116 million. Then they removed 1,281 budgeted positions. All of this while homicides grew 94% over the last 2 years. So we're facing the most understaffed agency in the entire nation, yet they've frozen my ability to hire as they're defunding me. So we're actually shrinking while crime is growing. It makes no sense whatsoever.
And unfortunately, there are other police departments and sheriff's offices that have gone through the same thing, but many of them have been more adaptable, have come to their senses and have refunded those departments initially. Yours is the largest defunding I'm aware of that hasn't been restored. Is that correct?
That is 100% correct. Every single city did kind of a played with the idea of defunding and went ahead and defunded. New York City, Minneapolis, Rochester, New York, Rochester, Minnesota, Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, City of Los Angeles, Austin, Texas. They all in Oakland PD. They all defunded, and then they regretted it, refunded. Our board of supervisors in LA County, they've actually doubled down on stupid, and they're insisting on continuing the defunding effort.
So you are, I have to say, a man of immense patience and courage, obviously. But what they're asking your department to do, your deputies on the street, I don't understand why there wouldn't be consequences, why the Board of Supervisors could be that ignorant and not be recalled or petitioned out.
Well, the only silver lining we have is that all of the supervisor districts got redrawn by an independent commission of citizens. So now they're all going to face the wrath of constituents that did not used to be their constituents. So now the politicians don't get to pick their voters. So we'll see how it pans out here in June and November of this election year. And hopefully we're going to get a moderate board that actually will listen to the community. And the community itself, they want more cops everywhere we go. We need more to see more deputies, not less.
Did those communities understand what their Board of Supervisors is doing to them? I mean, they're really consigning some of their fellow citizens to death at the hands of gangs and street thugs. It's incomprehensible that a community wouldn't understand the consequences of such a ignorant move on the part of a governmental body, whether it's LA County Board of Supervisors or a city council anywhere.
I have one supervisor, Holly Mitchell. She has vowed not to allow one more nickel to go to the sheriff's department. And her district, District 2, has the highest homicide rate and grand theft auto rate in the entire county. Highest rate of homelessness. Every single demographic that's bad, she has it. And she firmly believes that we're a threat to minority communities, not an actual source of protection. So that we're living a very strange time right now.
Yeah, well, certainly we do. I would like to get some, I know that you have got a great reputation for being engaged with the community. What can be done when you have, frankly, such institutionalized, it sounds to me, ignorance on your Board of Supervisors and a community that desperately needs to understand what's being done to them by the people they're electing?
I think ultimately, I've done 85 actually town halls since I took office in December of 2018. So I've crisscrossed the entire county. I've talked to tens of thousands of residents in person via Zoom. And I have the supervisor. They're hiding behind their offices, behind plexiglass in Zoom. They don't do public meetings. They do nothing with the public. They don't take answers or questions from the public, not even from the media. Unless it's very carefully scripted by the media, they will not address a question. And I'm doing the exact opposite of everything they're doing because I need to be held accountable and accessible to the public. And if these supervisors are not going to be that way, well, they need to be removed from office. And I'm going to ensure that the voters do exactly that.
Well, good for you. And I'm looking at some of your press that you're getting. You're up for election this year. I'm looking at people who are writing things suggesting that you have moved to the right while LA County has moved to the left. And there they're obviously, these writers of these articles are coming after you, but they're scratching their heads figuratively saying, well, you know, the Sheriff Villanueva, we just don't understand what he's doing. Do any of these people understand that the country, young people indeed, are moving more and more to the center and to the right in this country?
Oh, definitely. They live in a woke little bubble that they've created between the politicians and these writers. Every single person, the people that I speak to on the street, especially regarding homelessness, they do not care what party you belong to, what ideology. They're concerned about the homeless man defecating on their front lawn. That is going to totally rearrange their thought process about what local politics is all about. So if the Board of Supervisors wants to make that the new normal that they have to accept, well, they'll go from ultra-liberal to ultra-conservative in the blink of an eye. I understand that, but the board is married to an ideology that has gone way past its prime. I've never changed who I am. I've always advertised that I'm a Democrat of the JFK and the FDR tradition, or a moderate, and that's where most of the community lies, center right, center left, but I can talk to Republicans. I can talk to Democrats. That is where the community lies. They want to see results. They want to hold politicians accountable. Get the job done.
Well, I think that you've got it exactly right, and I think that anyone in any community, irrespective of his or her party, would want the sheriff to be at the center of politics in both his thinking and his actions. These woke prosecutors, and you've got one of the biggest in the country. Is there any way to, I know that there's a petition out. Is he going to be recalled, or is he going to continue to insult everyone in uniform, everyone who puts his and her life on the line to protect the community?
He is going to get recalled. The first effort wasn't very well organized or funded, but I think they all learned their lessons now. Now they have the funding first organization. They just pulled the petition, so it's now in circulation. They have 160 days. They got to reach 800,000 to have a safe buffer. And they will get the signatures because, I mean, every decision he's made for our department alone, his first year in office, 2021, he declined 12,074 cases. 12,074 cases that he declined, that we had the bad guy caught, evidence, everything, victim, and he said no prosecution. So the bad guy walked away. And the public is not putting up with that at all. And that is across the ideological spectrum. They want to sell it like, oh, these are disgruntled Trump supporters. No, it's going to be majority Democrats that are going to vote Gascon out of office.
Well, the Democratic Party, as you noted, is no longer the Democratic Party of JFK. For that matter, the Republican Party isn't the party of Eisenhower either. I think I should make it very clear.
Extremes are not helping us.
No, they're not. And the extremes that have been embedded, it seems, in our cities and our communities are, for example, Antifa, BLM, and their attacks on law enforcement in 2020 under any number of pretenses and pretexts. I think really we're the root of much of this hostility toward police and the actual orchestration of violence against police. What do you think?
Well, I think they pretty much exploited the murder of George Floyd for their own financial gain. And all that money they raised, over $90 million, lined the pockets of just a few individuals. Some of them went out to buy mansions, and the fact is they tried to sell the idea that systemic racism is rampant and it's all across the entire profession, and it is a false narrative.
Yeah.
Unlawful uses of force that results in the death of a black man is an extremely rare event. It's like a strike of lightning. That's how rare it is. But a cop dies approximately every single week. A cop dies at the hands of a felon during the commission of a felony. That is something that is far more common, yet Black Lives Matter tried to sell the idea that cops were an existential threat to young black men, not other young black men.
And part of the blame has to be laid at the feet of the popular media, if you can call it that. It's not so popular anymore. But the Los Angeles Times, your television news groups, how much of the problem do they represent? Are they accurately reporting what's going on, or are they just following in line as they do nationally with the ideological narrative, the consensus narrative of corporate media?
Oh, they definitely are following along with that corporate media. because they talk about systemic racism and mass incarceration, yet they can't acknowledge and their favorite word is disproportional. Everything that we do is disproportionately affects young people of color. But when young people of color are disproportionately committing violent crime, that part they don't really want to talk about. It's right. Just the fact that, yeah, the bad guy somehow is harmed by being incarcerated. No, they got there by their own actions, not some outcome out of a systemic racist planner, something like that. And that is that false narrative that the LA Times in particular keeps perpetuating in every single article they push out there, and they have no evidence to support it.
It's in Chicago. Black on black crime is just utterly ignored, and other major cities. When, as you well know, that is the preponderance of crime in black communities across the country. But again,
they're the victims.
Yeah, and you would think, just as the school closings disproportionately, to use that that word, disproportionately affects the minority students who are deprived of an opportunity to be in public school because the teachers' unions wants them closed for their own reasons. Meanwhile, the greatest equalizer in our society, our public school system, isn't working for those who need them most. It's outrageous.
That is very true. And then you hear complaints about school discipline and who is suspended and it's disproportionate. Well, you tell me, if someone assaults a teacher and should get, kicked out of school or suspended, as long as they're doing the same thing, be it white, black, Latino, Asian, there's nothing, you can't be complaining about the disproportionality. It's as long as they're all being treated the same is what counts. And that's the part they don't want to answer that question, because the answers doesn't satisfy their narrative.
Sheriff, how do we turn this around? You're having to eat all of these budget cuts. You're losing officers on the street. The community is losing protection. It is an absolutely mad piece of architecture. It doesn't make sense intellectually, logically, empirically. There is no evidence to say anything but the inverse, that the community suffers mightily. What can be done?
Well, there's a glimmer of hope. And when we cleared out the Venice Boardwalk, the homeless encampments, I got Democrats to start talking to Republicans and start looking at each other as neighbors. And we're realizing that, you know what, whoever they vote to send to Washington or to Sacramento to yell at each other doesn't really matter as much as who is their city council, their mayor, their sheriff, supervisor, DA, their local elected officials are going to make or break their community. So they got to start paying attention and start working together on what they share the common interest. Public safety knows no party. And I think when we start working together like that, people realize, wow, we can actually make a difference locally. Homelessness is a prime example.
Absolutely. Well, we all should want the same things, that is safety, protections, our family safe, our neighbors safe, our communities safe. And I, for one, just cannot comprehend how this narrative that was ginned up in 2020 primarily took on such a strong, prominent place in the narrative of the left in this country. But it's got to be fixed for the good of the country, and it's got to be fixed very, very soon. Sheriff, I can't tell you how much I admire what you're doing there. I appreciate it. I know your community does, even though probably they don't express it. That's the problem across this country. We don't say thanks to our law enforcement nearly as much as we should. But I want to say thank you, I give you the last word, as our custom here. But Sheriff, just want to say thanks for your time, all that you do for the community, and all that your department does for Los Angeles County.
Well, I want to thank you, Lou, for the opportunity to speak to your audience, and just let them know that help is on the way. We're going to get the left and the right to talk. And by doing so, we're going to bridge that gap of mistrust and ignorance and get people educated, hold our elected officials accountable, and we have the solutions. We just got to generate that political will.
Sheriff, we appreciate it. Sheriff Villanueva, thanks so much for being with us. And I want to just say God bless you. And I look forward to our next conversation. All the best of luck.
All right. You got it, sir. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And today we have with us a great American, a patriot. He's smart. He's got a great sense of humor. With us straight from Los Angeles, the Salem Radio Broadcasting Network's host of the Larry Elder Show. Great American, great broadcaster, great guy and friend. Larry Elder, welcome. How are you on this beautiful day in America?
Lou, I am excellent. Thank you very much. I appreciate you having me.
Well, it's a delight to have you with us and to talk with you as always. I want to start with something kind of different here. I've been watching Wall Street. There's nothing new about me watching Wall Street, but it's a tough day for Mark Zuckerberg and, of course, his investors. Meta stock, Facebook stock, down 26%. And, of course, Mark Zuckerberg, Larry, did the thing you would expect of great leaders. He immediately took responsibility and blamed TikTok. You got to love that kind of leadership, Larry.
Well, you know, young people are increasingly going to TikTok, so there may be something there. I would love to say that what's happening is a whole bunch of people are becoming ticked off at Facebook. If you saw the Molly Hemingway book called Rigged, turns out Mark Zuckerberg spent over $400 million to, quote, get out the vote, close quote, to influence the election in favor of Democrats. And everybody knows that Facebook has been suppressing conservative content. So I'd love to say that perhaps is a realization on the part of a lot of users that Facebook is not your friend, and maybe that's what's causing the decline, but I really just don't know. All I know is my young friends don't use Facebook. They use TikTok. They think Facebook is for old people, and there's nothing worse than your product being accused of being for old people.
Well, Facebook particularly, because he's got a lot of land in Hawaii to pay for and to sustain over there. And I just hate to see him get hurt like that. He'll be down to his next 10 or his last 10 or $20 billion if he keeps this up. The idea that
it's scary to me.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, it's just scary. It's scary to me, Lou, the power these social media platforms have. You know, when I ended my campaign for governor, I was a smidge just under a million followers on Twitter. And I've never had a bigger footprint. I've never been more well-known than I am right now. And I've lost 30,000 followers since September the 14th. And I lose about 100 every day on Twitter. And it isn't because people don't know who I am. I'm clearly being shafted because of the stuff I post. You post anything at all skeptical about the 2020 election, yeah, anything at all skeptical about what the CDC is doing regarding COVID-19, and you're heard on these platforms. And it's just absolutely scary, frightening how much power they have.
It is indeed, and I will tell you, not even running for office, I've been shadow banned on, yep, Facebook for a very long time. Over 2 million people on Twitter, that stayed pretty much the same over the last couple of years. It's as you say, it's pretty clear what's going on, and it's not so clear why there isn't something done about it. But we'll see how things work out. The markets tend to always be self-correcting in these things. And I think we're seeing an example of it today with Facebook stock off 26%. I want to turn to your run for governor, your political aspirations. I know you just started a PAC as well. Give us a sense of what your political aspirations are now. With your looking at the rearview mirror at your run for governor.
Well, by any stretch of the imagination, we did extremely well in our run. We only got into the race, Lou, with 8 weeks left. And in eight weeks, we raised $22 million. That was more than all my Republican rivals combined, including a millionaire who self-funded. There are 58 counties in California. We carried 57 of them on the replacement side. The only one we didn't carry was San Francisco. And we didn't spend one dime or 1 minute campaigning there. We got 49% of the vote. That was more than all of the 45 rivals on the replacement side combined. mind. Gavin Newsom had to outspend us 10 to 1. In came Barack Obama. In came Kamala Harris. Nancy Pelosi. Bernie Sanders cut a commercial for him. Elizabeth Warren cut a commercial for him. Biden came out and campaigned for him. And all they said, Lou, was stop the Republican takeover. Elder is a Trump Republican. Elder is a Trump wannabe. I think Joe Biden said I was more Trump than Trump, whatever the hell that means. And it worked in California. And so, the temptation to try it again. He's up for re-election in November. But I felt that I could probably win with a recall election because you could win conceivably with as little as 25% of the total votes cast. You can't do that in a mano race against Gavin Newsom in a landscape like California where Republicans are outnumbered 3 to 1. So I'm not going to run against him.
Well, Larry's talking. I just want to explain what you're talking about there just for a moment. In the runoff, all that had to happen was Gavin Newsom be recalled, and immediately the front runner amongst all opponents would be the new governor, correct?
That's right. It was a two-step deal. First, 50% one of the voters had to vote to recall Gavin Newsom. Then you go to the replacement side, and whoever gets the most votes to replace him would become the next governor. And I clearly got more votes than anybody else, as I mentioned, combined. So had 50% plus one voted to recall Gavin Newsom, I'd be talking to you from Sacramento, Lou. But that didn't happen. It didn't happen for all the reasons I mentioned. Big Tech came out. They were scared to death. The recall was losing by double digits until I got into the race. And then it went into the margin of error. And that's when Gavin Newsom called out the dogs. And by that, I'm talking about Big Tech, Hollywood, the public sector unions, the teachers unions. Reed Hastings, this co-CEO of Netflix, gave him $3 million to defeat the recall. Snoop Dogg tweeted to his 14 million followers on Twitter that I'm a really bad person, that they ought not recall me. They ought not recall Gavin Newsom, even though Snoop Dogg is big on education, big on urbanism, and one of the big issues in the campaign was my support for school choice. So that's what they had to do in order to defeat me. So what I've done is set up a political action committee. It's called elderforamerica.com. I'm asking people to throw a little something in the tip jar because with my newfound footprint, I'm able to travel around the country, campaign for Republicans in very important swing races and swing districts. We're going to campaign to get rid of these soft on crime DAs. We're going to campaign for school choice. We're going to campaign to get rid of critical race theory. So those are the issues I'm going to be raising and campaigning for with elderforamerica.com.
So you're going to be a helper, not a candidate.
Funny you should say that, Lou. I have a FedEx driver who kept dropping off stuff during the campaign. And when the race was over, he kept asking me, am I going to run again? And I decided, as I mentioned, to start this pack. I just launched the pack about 2 or 3 weeks ago. I walk outside and the FedEx guy is there. And he goes, Larry, are you going to run again? And I told him what I told you. I'm starting Elder for America, political action committee, help the Republicans take back the House, the Senate, campaign for school choice. And he said, oh, you're going to direct.
That's a lot of
that's
doing.
Only somebody in Hollywood would say something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, exactly. You're going to direct. Only somebody in California would say something like that.
And me being a country boy, I just said you're going to be a helper. I don't know. I'm going to have to get up to Hollywood standards. But let me ask you this.
There you go.
With the PAC, with radio, you're going to continue doing radio, of course. What is it that you think is going on in the state, your state, when we talked recently with the county sheriff, the Los Angeles County Sheriff, Alex Villanueva, who has bypassed George Gascon, the district attorney there, the what would we call him, a Soros molded and supported district attorney.
Right.
What are you going to do about that? Up at the San Francisco Police Department head, the chief of police there, is now bypassing that DA for the same damn reasons. What is it that California doesn't seem to understand about the importance of having law enforcement and prosecution of lawbreakers?
Well, there is an increasingly greater understanding of what George Soros has done by putting these two people in San Francisco and in Los Angeles. You're finding now crime hitting the suburban areas. As you probably know, there was a UCLA grad student who was murdered, stabbed to death in Hancock Park, for crying out loud. That is the trendy area, high-end area, where Maxine Waters has her $5 million mansion. There was an 80-year-old man whose wife was murdered in Beverly Hills. He's a music mogul. And it turns out the thug had a long record, should never have been out. We have these soft-on-crime DAs, a soft-on-crime governor, who's bragged about the fact that he's overseen the release of almost 18,000 convicted felons since he's been governor. What could possibly go wrong? Many of these convicted felons were violent offenders. You have cashless bail. You have a Proposition 47 that allows criminals to steal $950, not a day, but per store. And if they get caught, the worst that'll happen is they get a ticket as a misdemeanor and, of course, cashless bail, so they don't have to show up. So what I'm saying is a greater number of people are recognizing what's going on. Crime is up in L.A., where I'm talking to you from, Lou, 40% year to year. And the disproportionately large number of the victims of this crime are the very black and brown people that people like Gavin Newsom and Nancy Pelosi and these DAs brag that they're protecting. So there's a greater understanding that these people have to go. There have been two recall efforts against both the DAs. One in L.A. has failed because they couldn't gather enough signatures. But there's another effort that's being started. There's one also in the Bay Area that's being started. And I think if they get the signatures in time, there's going to be a recall of both these bozos, and hopefully they'll be recalled. But I'm telling you, crime is going up, not just in the inner city, but in the suburbs. And once these rich white people that have been writing these checks for these left-wing politicians get hurt, then maybe then there'll be an awakening and a reassessment. I hope so anyway.
Yeah, I know what you're saying when you talk about those rich white people that are helping those DAs out. But let's be real clear. The communities, whether African-American or Hispanic, and their organized left-wing initiatives, I'll call it that, are not helping either. They're certainly helping those DAs and are very pleased with the results. This is a mess, and it's a mess that is your PAC going to be supporting these petition efforts, these recall efforts?
Oh, absolutely. That's one of the things I'm doing with it. We're going after these soft on crime DAs. We're going to be supporting people that actually believe bad guys should go to prison for the time required, given the gravity of their sentences. That's what we're going to be doing with the PAC, all these kinds of issues. But this is absolutely outrageous. You know, come on, Lou. What's the number one responsibility of government? To protect people and property, and it's not being done.
Yeah, you know, government has turned on the people of this country, whether at the local level, the state, or the federal. They do not feel that government is working for them. In fact, they figure government is working against them. This January 6th committee is an example where Americans are being abused. They're taking political prisoners. It's a partisan initiative that's worthy of the Soviet era show trials. It's disgusting. And we have to get by this, and we have to bring into balance the left-wing Marxist energy in this country that is overwhelming our governments, our way of life.
You know, Lou, the biggest neutron bomb that government has dropped on the society is what they've done to the family. We talked about crime a moment ago. Yeah. Much of this crime is being committed by people of color. And the government has incentivized women to marry the government and incentivized men with financial and moral responsibility, to the point now where 75% of black kids enter the world without a father married to the mother. And forget about elder Lou. Barack Obama once said, a kid raised without a father is 5 times more likely to be poor and commit crime, 9 times more likely to drop out of school, and 20 times more likely to end up in prison. We've gone from having 25% of black kids born into the world without a father married to the mother in 1965, to, as I mentioned, almost 75% now. 25% of white kids are now into the world without a father married to the mother. Half of Hispanic kids do. And 40% of all kids in America now enter the world without a father married to the mother. And it is a direct consequence of the welfare state. It's destroyed the family, caused crime to go up, caused the decline in the quality of public education, caused people to, when they do graduate from high school, they can't read, write, and compute at grade level. We don't have school choice. I could go on and on and on. But the number one sin is what they've done to the nuclear intact family. For crying out loud, you got movements like Black Lives Matter that attacks the nuclear family. They had on their website that the nuclear family was a Western civilization construct and that they should look to alternative ways of raising children. It's breathtakingly offensive what that movement has done and what the government has done in general to the family in America.
But the good news is no one can find their leadership anymore. No one knows what they're doing. And they took ownership of the Communist Party headquarters mansion in Canada. Isn't that great?
In Canada. Right. And the co-founder of Black Lives Matter, named, she calls herself a trained Marxist. And of course, the founding principle of Marxists is that there ought not be any private property. She owns four pieces of property, including one at the Panga Canyon, over $2 million. I think it's about 0.1% of the people there are Black. So the Black Lives Matter founder has a mansion in an area where basically there are no Blacks. You can't make this up.
Well, and you can tell that nothing matters to her but the improvement of the quality of life and the standard of living of Black people, just as the name of the organization would imply. Basically, we find out they've done nothing, absolutely nothing, for their community, and done everything to them by taking the money, buying up, as you say, mansions and spending it. There's $60 million missing. And corporate America has been pouring money into that organization, which might just well set up many of these corporations for a class action lawsuit from their shareholders, because fiduciary responsibility they have not demonstrated. I want to turn, if I may, to the president's mental and physical health, which seems to be in decline. I wonder, everybody listening to us, they have not seen the video of Jill Biden. I don't call Dr. Jill Biden, because I reserve that, and I always have, whether on the broadcast or in my personal life. I would not call anyone doctor unless they were a medical doctor. She is not a medical doctor, and I won't be calling her Dr. Jill. I won't call her Jill, but I will call her Mrs. Biden. She leading the president of the United States as if he were a dog off a stage, down the steps and through the crowd, as with her head bowed, plowing straight ahead at a very slow rate. Plowing is a little strong for what she was doing. It's embarrassing. It was clear the president of the United States could not have left that stage without someone's assistance. Your thoughts?
Well, and of course, Joe Biden is not just a regular guy. He happens to be the leader of the free world and the most powerful person on the planet. But Lou, let's not forget about Dr. J. I mean, he earned that title. But getting back to Biden, remember, Biden's job was to do one thing and one thing only, and that's to make sure that Donald Trump did not have a second. After that, the Democrats did not care, do not care. And the plan is for, at some point, him to turn over the reins to Kamala Harris, as unpopular as she is. That was the entire game plan. They wanted to make sure that Bernie Sanders did not get the nomination, because remember, he won the Nevada caucuses. And for one shining moment, he was the front runner, a self-described socialist was the front runner, and the Democrats knew he couldn't win. So Joe Biden, they coalesced around him after James Clyburn endorsed him before the South Carolina primary. He was the amiable guy, perceived to be a moderate, perceived to be somebody who would not send out nasty tweets like Donald Trump did and defeat Donald Trump. After that, mission accomplished. As far as they're concerned, is gravy. They intend to turn it over to somebody else, and that somebody else is very likely going to be Kamala Harris. And the left is fine with that.
Yeah, the left may be fine with it, but the rest of the country isn't. They're very disturbed about what this president is doing. The country is going in the wrong direction, say more than 2/3 of Americans. Right now, I don't know what the correct process would be, because she is reviled and he is loathed almost as much. And no one trusts either one of them to be capable of carrying out the functions of the commander in chief in this country. What do we do now, Larry?
I agree with your analysis, but I'm telling you, they painted themselves into a corner. The most loyal part of the Democratic base are Black females. And Black females love, love, love Kamala Harris. And if somehow, some way, they try and get rid of her, the only way they could pull that off is if she walked into the Oval Office and said, "Joe, I want to be the next Supreme Court justice. And I want to go. That's the job I want." Because if she's perceived to have been kicked out of the number two spot swept aside in some sort of way, the wrath of Black females would be something to behold. And again, that's the most loyal part of the Democratic base. I'm not saying they'd vote for Donald Trump as he ran in 2024. What they would do is stay home, and they would encourage other people to stay home. So they're trapped. They're stuck with her.
Yeah, that's interesting, because if you do the demographically, take a look at our population. The African-American population in this country is just a little over 12%. The female proportion of that would be about 6% of the population then, Black women, females. And you think they have that much control and power over the Democratic Party? I'm not arguing with you, but I'm just highlighting how few people can have a position of strength within a caucus and constituent and coalition party like the radical Dems. It is really crazy. The left is in control all the way with the Democratic Party.
Keep in mind, we just need a few swing states. Wisconsin, Milwaukee, Michigan, Detroit, Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, heavy, heavy Black populations, heavy, heavy Democrats. And you take away that, and the Republicans can win those swing states. So the Black vote is very important in states like that. Georgia as well, Atlanta. That's how Joe Biden won, by overperforming in Milwaukee, overperforming in Philadelphia, overperforming in Atlanta, and overperforming in Detroit. And that's the Black vote. You get rid of that, and the Democratic Party is in deep, deep voodoo.
Well, deep, deep doo-doo. You know, that deep, deep.
I said voodoo. Voodoo. V is in victory. V is in victory.
I'm glad you straightened that out, because I got to be honest with you. I kind of like that deep, deep doo-doo.
No, deep, deep voodoo.
But either way, voodoo or doo-doo, we know one thing. Playing a very large part in what transpired in Wayne County in Michigan and Fulton County in Georgia, playing a very large part where those drop boxes, which are illegal in many states, but suddenly took on great importance and currency and legitimacy conferred by the secretaries of state in those states, for those counties in particular. It was determinant. Right now, you see the Democratic Party just about, they're apoplectic, because state after state is now saying there will be no more drop boxes, and absentee ballots will not be shipped out by the millions to a few hundred thousand people. It won't happen again. So says the Republican Party. Now, I've heard of their BS before, but that's what they're saying right now. What do you think?
Well, you know, Lou, I want to break some news on your program. Last night, I saw a part of a film that Dinesh D'Souza is doing, talking about all these drop boxes and about these mules who went to drop boxes one after another, after another, after another. They've got videotape of people stuffing things into these drop boxes. I can't say a whole lot more about it. I've been sworn to secrecy, but there's a trailer that you can see on YouTube. And I'm telling you, it is jaw-dropping, the information that I've seen with my own baby brown African-American eyeballs. And if one-tenth of what I just saw is accurate, it's going to be an earthquake. Even people who are partisan are going to have to look in the mirror and say, I cannot ignore all of this evidence. And remember about these drop boxes. Let's take one state, Wisconsin. Donald Trump, of course, sued Wisconsin to have the election overturned. And that went all the way up to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And it was a 4-3 decision. And there was a dissent filed by the Chief Justice of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And she said what you said. These drop boxes are absolutely illegal. And recently, just a few days ago, a judge in Waukesha County ruled that going forward, these drop boxes are illegal. And so, as I said, the evidence I saw with my own eyes was pretty compelling, and it's going to shake this country up once that documentary comes out.
Yes, and I can't wait to see that. I understand you've even got a role in the Dinesh D'Souza documentary. Are you narrating that?
I got a cameo.
All right.
And my and speaking of films, my documentary Uncle Tom won. We raised about $500,000 to do it, Lou, and it grossed almost $5 million. Uncle Tom 2 is coming out within the next couple of months, and it's going to be every bit, in my opinion, as impactful as the first one was. I'm looking forward to that. And I also have a cameo role in that. I'm the executive producer of both documentaries, and I have a cameo role in both of them.
Well, you are a camera hog, I swear. I'm delighted you are. Can't wait to see the documentaries and your cameo role, which I suspect means you take about, 20% of the time in that documentary? Or is that your idea of a cameo?
No, not even that. If you saw the first one, I was barely in it. These documentaries are not about me. They're about how the Black community has no, the government for family and for God. And that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, I'm just kidding you, Larry. Come on. Black Americans suing New York City over their proposal to grant voting rights to illegal immigrants. That, I think, is one of the biggest deals here of late for African Americans to be suing New York City because the city is going to allow illegal immigrants to vote. Your reaction to what I think is a seminal moment in establishing the integrity of the American electoral system.
Well, I understand it's something like 800,000 people, and I don't think they're illegal aliens. I think they're non-citizens. I think they're here legally, but they are not citizens. But either way, it's interesting because Black people are apparently victimized by the Republicans who supposedly are suppressing the vote. And now you're having Black people say, we're suing the city of New York because you're watering down our vote. Basically, you're suppressing our vote by allowing non-citizens to vote. So it's really interesting. What I find fascinating, Lou, is that why is it only Black Americans who are suing? Why isn't everybody suing? The whole thing is outrageous.
Are you
These
kidding?
People are here.
White people don't
not
have
citizens. Why is it?
White people have been trying to get these voting rights stripped from jurisdictions that allow non-citizens or illegal immigrants or both to vote because they're called racist if they do.
You mean white Democrats?
I mean white voodoo.
Well, I'm just surprised there isn't greater outrage. I remember once even Hillary Clinton saying that non-citizens should not be allowed to vote. That was years ago. Yeah. At one time, the Democrats sounded like Trump on immigration. It was Barack Obama and Nancy Pelosi and Dianne Feinstein. I remember after the first attempt to bomb the World Trade Center, Harry Reid went off about how easy it is to become a citizen, that you can have a child on American soil, you're a legal alien, and that child is a citizen. Democrats used to sound like Trump before Trump sounded like Trump on immigration. And they did a 180 because they made the calculation that illegal aliens, current citizens, current voters would vote Democrat.
Exactly. And we're voting Democrat. And by the way, Harry Reid caught holy hell for what he said and how he said it. And you haven't heard a Democrat take up that tone or that side of the argument since. You know, Larry, as always, it's great to have you with us and it's great to spend some time talking with you. I am delighted. You've got your hand in a lot of fires, two documentaries, your PAC, your radio show, and your terrific commitment to being a great American. We appreciate it. We thank you for your time. As always, our guests get the last word, and this is yours.
Well, thank you. And Lou, I also have a book about my campaign coming out pretty soon. But I want to say this about you.
I'm sorry, Larry. I can't keep track of everything you're doing. Keep it up. Go for it.
You know, I'm a New York Times bestseller. I've had two books on the New York Times bestselling list. My first book was called The 10 Things You Can't Say in America, which came out in 2000. But what I wanted to say real quickly is we were talking about illegal immigration. You were on the vanguard of bringing that issue to the forefront. It was considered to be almost a fringe, almost a racist thing to bring up when you were talking about this when you were on CNN. And you talked about it over and over and over again. You made the Republicans feel uncomfortable about it. But ultimately, you opened their eyes and people began to realize this was a very important issue. And I don't think but for you and the way you were just hammering away on this issue, I'm not sure it ever would have risen to the level of concern that it has right now. So you should take a bow for bringing this issue up, for having the courage to do it, and running the risk of being called all sorts of nasty names as you were when you brought up the issue of illegal immigration and things like chain migration, for crying out loud. No one was talking about that until you did.
Right. Well, you're very kind to say so, and I appreciate your kind words as always, Larry. I even appreciate your words when they're not kind, and I appreciate you taking time to be with us. You know, and I hope you'll come back soon. I wish you all the best, and thanks for being with us. I know you got a lot of pressure on your schedule, and we're thankful. So have a great one.
Anytime, Lou. Thank you.
And God bless you.
God bless.
Larry Alder, a great American and a terrific broadcaster, and a man who you can always count on him to know what he's talking about. It's terrific. Can't wait to see all of this unfold. But two documentaries. He's got the book. He's got what else? The pack going. And oh yeah, his day job, the Larry Alder Show on the great Salem Radio Network. Folks, we appreciate you being with us. Thank you for doing so. And we'll see you tomorrow. God bless.
Join us again tomorrow for the Great America Podcast. Stay in the fight. Truth, justice, and the American way will prevail against all enemies, against all odds.